This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
We are joined by Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer. Jeff, I'm kind of at a loss for words. I don't even know where to start, my friend.
is there anything else you want to talk about? Maybe we just turn this into a non-Saints segment. That might be the best option.
Obviously you saw. I'm just going to shift the onus to you. I watched every minute of last night's game. I did not leave the screen. I stayed right there, and I just kept hoping that something was going to turn, and it just didn't.
Never did. Sure, certainly never did. And you know, I love Drew Brees. Drew Brees is one of my favorite people of all time. You know, he's gonna like. I can't remember the last time the Saints played. They haven't played well with him in the building since he was a player. Let's put it that way. Every time he's in that building, bad things happen. And that was the only thing that was good about that night is he was able to lead a halftime chant. I didn't think it was going to happen. I'm going to be honest. I didn't think it was going to go well for him. But props to whoever decided, hey, we're going to put the script up on the video boards to help these fans out. And the fans, they did their job. So that's the most effective thing that was Saints-related that happened in that game. Let's put it that way. And you know, it's funny. You look at it and you say, "Well, what went wrong?" And it's a simple, like, we know the script, right? Like we know the script because it's exactly what happened on Sunday. You couldn't stop the run. You couldn't take the quarterback to the ground. They didn't even get a QB hit on Bo Nix. And listen, Bo Nix was not good in that game. You watch that game. He's short hopping balls to receivers like he's a shortstop making a throw from like deep left field. Like he was not good. If he's league average in that game, the Broncos probably dropped 50. It was that bad. And I mean, you know, DA was asked after the game if he thinks players have quit. You know, Richard Sherman was on the broadcast on the prime radio broadcast kind of saying, hey, this team is playing like
I heard that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like that's
look, I don't believe that. A little bit I've been around. These guys are professionals. You have nights where it may look that way because they recognize we're so out of this game. There's no way we're getting back into this game. You know.
I agree with that. I think the word you'd use would be demoralized. Like I don't think anyone's out there making business decisions or quitting or whatever. Yeah. And that's kind of what we heard from the players. Like we talked to the players about it, and they kind of all said the same thing. It's like, hey. Things get away from you sometimes, and it's like it's how you respond to it. I just don't think they responded particularly well, right? And the problem is you're talking about we're saying the same thing two times in 5 days, and it starts to get really ugly. And especially when you put that tape out there in front of a national audience, that's when you're going to get the halftime show making very loud opinions about what they're watching. And frankly, like the Saints didn't give them any reason to say anything else. You know, you couldn't get anything done on offense. You couldn't get anything done on defense. Like, remember, this is not a good Broncos offense. That rushing attack was ranked 29th in the NFL coming into the game. They did whatever they wanted. I think I counted it up. They had something like 16 first down runs, and at least 10 of them went for 6 yards or more. You were constantly giving them second and medium, second and short, or frankly, just a first down on first down. I mean, you got 10 days here, you know, and obviously the injuries are a factor. Paulson Adebo went down with kind of a gruesome injury. He broke his femur in that game. He had to have he was supposed to undergo surgery. They took him to the hospital during the game. I don't know exactly how that went. If it's done, if he's kind of started rehab or whatever, that's just add that to the list, right? You put Rashid Shaheed on IR. You were without Chris Olave. Derek Carr wasn't there. You have three offensive linemen who didn't play. Taysom Hill hasn't played. Pete Werner hasn't played. Like, it's not an excuse to say the injuries are making life miserable and, frankly, at points feeling impossible for this team to put together a winning effort. But it's, you know, it's the NFL. Like, you got to be able to manage that in better ways than you have. Because if you're up there losing close games and you can say, man, if you had this guy, that might have been a different result. These have not been close games. I mean, the only scoring drive you had when that game was actually in the balance, you had to go for it on fourth down at your own 30-yard line just to give yourself some hope. You were that desperate in the first half. So it's bleak right now. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Like, you know, this team either has to figure something out or there's going to be changes.
How many starters are actually out now? Do we know?
You're putting me on the spot. I mean,
it's at least six, right? I mean,
I think it's double digits at this point. I mean, if you consider Taysom Hill a starter, if you consider the three offensive linemen, that's four, you know, the two wide receivers. So, you know, that's six right there. Pete Werner, Marshawn Lattimore finished that game on the bench, still with a hamstring injury. Nick Saldivari went out of that game. So even the backup starters are out. Yeah. So, I mean, without sitting here and going one by one, I'd guess 10 to 12, right? And, you know, Will Harris, another starter, he's on IR. It's just, you know, you it's hard to look at it and say, man, this is just bad luck. You really have to kind of dive into it a little deeper than that. DA has mentioned they're trying to kind of put their finger on, hey, what can we be doing differently? I don't know if they've identified anything right now in terms of, hey, you know, how do you fix this type of thing midseason? But yeah, I can't recall a season that was impacted more significantly by injuries, and not just like injuries to some key players, like injuries everywhere you look. There was 18 players listed on the Saints injury report going into this game. 18. You only field 22 players at a time, like on the offensive defense. Like it's a 53-man roster. That's more than a third of your roster right there. Thankfully you have 10 days. You can hopefully get some of these players back, but you know, you gotta, I think it's gotta be more than just a roster reset. It's gotta be a mental reset too.
And a big problem, and you tell me, Jeff, you've been doing this a long time. I mean, when you have someone like Richard Sherman say what he says, because I'm getting a lot of texts. Look, I think I trust Richard Sherman's opinion more so than mine. Well, obviously, I mean, he was a player. I've never, you know, I've been in a locker room, but not as a player. I just find it hard. In fact, I was listening to comments of Jim Mora last night in the aftermath of the game, and he got a little teed up about some folks saying that, you know, he thought that, you know, the team, they thought the team quit and the season's over. He goes, the season's never over. You know, you never know whether other teams in your division are going to fall into the same situation that you fell into in the first third of the season. It could very well happen to them in the middle of the season. You never know. So you always got to be thinking that, you know, and looking forward and everything else. But when you have someone like that on national TV make the comments that he made, it's a little bit hard to overcome, right?
Well, I mean, there's a perception of your team. That's why these primetime games, these national games are important to perform well in, because, you know, we watch all these games. We see all these games. We know, hey, there's a lot of injuries. We know they're starting a rookie quarterback. We know all of the circumstances that go into why a game like that happened for the Saints. But this audience that's seeing the Saints for the first time, they don't care. They're looking at it and saying, I want to be entertained by a football game. Why do networks pick teams for primetime games? Because they think they're going to draw ratings, because these games are supposed to be entertaining. And so you put that product out there in front of an audience that hasn't watched the Saints all year, maybe on that Monday night game against the Chiefs, which was also not exactly an entertaining game, and you create this image of a team that's just not worth watching. You know, and you feel for the fans in the building, because they all went in there. They want to be hyped up. They want to yell. They want to cheer. They want to get excited about something other than the guy who doesn't play here anymore going into the Team Hall of Fame. He just gave them nothing. And so it's hard to, you know, you can disagree with Richard. I disagree with Richard. I don't think, you know, these guys are professionals. They're going out there. They're putting everything they have into that game, and it's just not going their way. And again, it is demoralizing, especially when you see one of the players that, you know, you've gone out there and fought with breaking his femur on national television. And again, a gruesome injury. And, you know, it's tough, but at the end of the day, the tape you put out there is the tape that exists. And that's all, that's what Richard is reacting to. Now, does he have insight into what these players are thinking on the field? Absolutely not. You know, we talked to Tyron after the game, and he said he was going to talk to Richard and kind of be like, hey, what are you talking about? You know, they know each other. Again, it's like, hey, you are what the tape says you are. And right now the tape says the Saints are just not a very good football team.
And part of the problem is when you have this uncertainty about who's actually starting. I mean, they actually had some injuries during practice this past week. You had a short time frame, a lot of games in a short period of time. Not a lot of time to really recoup. Thankfully, they've got this period of time, and Dennis Allen talked about it in his postgame, to try and get some of this back on track, to try and get through some of these nagging injuries. Because it's one thing to be injured that you can't play, but we know that these players are walking out on the field, in many cases, by this point in time in the season, a little bit less than, because they got these little nagging things. And when you're playing a lot of games in a short period of time, they get exacerbated and highlighted. And it's a problem. And as the coach pointed out, it's not an excuse. It's just a reality, right?
Yeah, and I mean, he wanted to make sure that it's like, you know, I don't want this to be construed as me saying, hey, we can't win because of the injuries. Like, you have to play better football. But, you know, it is remarkable when you look at all the players they don't have, the Saints don't have. I mean, like, you talk about, hey, you know, I don't hate the idea of seeing what we have in Spencer Rattler, right? Like, I think that's a positive that you can say, hey, we're getting tapes and we're getting game film that we can break down and we can work on and we can improve on. But I don't think in any universe you were like, hey, if we try out Spencer Rattler and see what he has, we're going to have him throw into Bub Means, Mason Tipton, and Cedric Wilson and saying, good luck, kid. You know, and that's what makes it frustrating is, like, I'd like to know what he has with an offense around him. And that's kind of what D.A. said. Like, he struggled in that game. There's no question about it. But it's not all about Spencer Rattler. It's about the cast of characters around him that you need to help a rookie quarterback play well. And it's just – none of it was good enough. And that's what makes it incredibly frustrating. You'd like to be able to say, hey, it's the defense. Fix the defense. And suddenly, hey, this will look better. It's on both sides of the ball. I mean, again, the offense didn't sustain the drive the entire game until, you know, Spencer came out and you put Jake Haener in, kind of that garbage time drive. I actually thought Jake looked pretty good. He handled that situation well. And I think that maybe gives you some questions as to, hey, do you consider making a change there in 10 days when you go out to L.A. and seeing what Jake has to offer? Are you worried that you're putting your young quarterback that you feel like has a high ceiling and can develop into something in a situation where he's just going to lose all of his confidence? And I think that is a real concern. One positive, I thought Kendre Miller looked really good in the limited snaps he got. I don't know why his snaps were so limited. You know, you would have liked to see him get a little bit more run there when the game was in the balance, but I asked DA after the game. He said, yeah, I think that's a guy who can help us. He was pleased with what he saw. So maybe he's someone who, you know, again, like Jim Morris said, like, the season's not over. You got to string some wins together. And the problem is right now it's really hard to see a scenario where you can do that based on what we've watched over the last 3 weeks. But, you know, you take from this game, you see what went well, you try to build on it, and you go from there. It's with the bodies you have, with the injuries you have, it's a really kind of bleak scenario right now.
And there were multiple people that said this last night. They said if they had to pick one thing about the game that is the most problematic for them in their perspective, and I would agree with this, is that you have two back-to-back games where the other team's offense has rushed for over 200 yards. And he says when you dig deep and you look at that, we're just getting manhandled at the front line. And most of our tackles are being made by DBs in many respects. And, you know, we saw a Debo going down trying to assist on a tackle. It was made by another DB.
Yeah, and I mean, this game, you know, Jordan Howden was your leading tackler, his safety. Alante Taylor was your second leading tackler. I thought Alante Taylor played pretty well. But, no, it's I think Tyrann Mathieu said this, like, you can't be a good defense if you can't stop the run. Like, there's no such thing as a good defense in the NFL that it can't stop the run. And especially when you're talking about, hey, this was not an elite rushing offense. This was the 29th ranked rushing offense in the NFL. And if you can't stop this offense from running the ball, you're not going to stop any offense from running the ball. So that's kind of where it starts, I think, for the Saints. You got to figure out how to win the line of scrimmage on defense in some way. And if you can do that, I still think you can cover. I think you have the secondary. I think you have the pieces. But, you know, when you can't stop the defense and you have to devote more and more bodies to the run, it makes life easier on the back or in the passing game, and you can't cover the way you want to. And that's kind of been the story. So, yeah, I think if this Saints defense wants to turn things around, that's where it's got to start. You got to find a way to stifle the run game and get back to that stretch. Hey, it's not that long ago that we were talking about, hey, the Saints haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher in 2 years. You know, and now we're talking about 200-yard rushing games in back-to-back weeks. And, yeah, I think that has to be where it starts.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Bo Nix was 16 of 26 for 164 yards. I counted six passes that he threw last night to receivers that were wide open, that were like 5 yards short. And, you know, he was throwing off his back foot or whatever it may be, and he really wasn't
setting
up very well.
He threw one directly to Tyrann Mathieu, and Tyrann dropped it.
Yeah. So that stat could have easily been 22 or 26 for 260 yards before it was all said, you know, and done. Well, hopefully we're able to mend ourselves a little bit as we head out to the Chargers, but that's not going to be an easy game either, right?
No, I mean, the Chargers, they're going to run the ball. That's kind of their identity on offense. So it's definitely not a matchup you want if you're a team that can't stop the run. But you'll have to see. Again, you got 10 days to figure this thing out. And I think that's going to be a very critical 10 days for a lot of people on this roster and this coaching staff.
No doubt. Jeff Nowak, as always, truly appreciate your time. I know you were up late last night. We appreciate it. Thank you so much, and have a great weekend.
For sure. No, you too.
Thank you, sir. Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter and digital content producer, will be right back, folks. On the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. When we come back, we'll visit with Jan Moeller, Invest in Louisiana. He's not excited about the flat tax, and we'll talk about that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Be right back. Governor Jeff Landry's calling a special session to deal with tax reformation. A lot of folks were still waiting for a lot of the details of what is going to happen there. And we're joined by Jan Moeller, Invest in Louisiana, that wrote an editorial opinion piece that was published recently in NOLA.com. And he joins us. Jan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Jan. Your thoughts, in your opinion piece, you talk about how you don't believe that this is the flat tax wouldn't fix Louisiana's problems. Expound on that.
Sure. Well, thanks again for having me on. And let's just back up a little bit, if you don't mind, because this is sure. about a whole lot more than the flat tax, which is one of the things, you know, Governor Landry, I'll give him credit for being really ambitious, because what he is proposing to do in just 2 weeks in November, right before the holiday season, is two basic things. He's proposing the largest overhaul of Louisiana's tax structure in more than a half a century. And at the same time, he's also proposing the largest, most comprehensive change to the state constitution that we've seen since the Constitutional Convention in the early 1970s, and he wants to do both of those things in a little over 2 weeks. And you're right, we don't have a lot of details. So this is a tax reform effort. He's calling it reform. I don't know if I would use that that term, but it's also a constitutional convention in disguise. Your listeners may remember that the governor's top priority during the spring legislative session was to have a constitutional convention. The Senate said no to that idea because they felt it was rushed. Well, this isn't a full-fledged constitutional convention, but the first bill in this package is a bill that's 128 pages long to rewrite Article 7 of the state constitution, which is the meatiest of the articles because it deals with all the taxes and budgets. It's a very complex proposal, and it's a lot for legislators to really walk through and try to get to. So there are a lot of problems with this. The flat tax, I think our fundamental problem with it is that it's going to reduce a lot of revenue and essentially force the state to raise taxes other places, push the tax burden onto low and moderate income families. And I don't think you're going to get the bang for the buck that they say that you're going to get for that.
One of the things that I've been curious about is, you know, they're going to broaden the tax base on the sales tax side, tax more types of transactions. I've always been, as you well know, I was the tax collector in Jefferson Parish, and I was responsible for that for a long period of time and learned more about it than I ever cared to know, quite frankly. But I always thought that what we should do is take a deep dive into these exemptions that we offer. And I'm not going to say that they're fraudulent, but they're utilized by companies that receive them that I think is a lot broader way than what was originally intended by the legislation that provided these exemptions. And it seems to me that we should take a much more proactive approach in looking at these exemptions to see whether or not we're actually getting the bang for our buck. They were given, and some of them go back to the 50s, to stimulate a sector of the economy, right? And you know as better than most, economic conditions have changed in a lot of different ways. And I don't know that there's this viability argument that we can make about some of these exemptions. It still makes sense to us. Your thoughts?
I couldn't agree more. And look, the governor is right in a fundamental sense that we do have a lot of exemptions on the books. We have a lot of sales tax exemptions on the books. And then we have a lot of tax breaks built into the corporate tax code and the individual tax code. And it definitely makes sense to back up and look at those things. I would argue that it should take the legislature a lot more than 2 weeks that research. But especially because a lot of these legislators are in their first term. You know, we're in the first year of a quadrennium We have term limits in the legislature. So, you know, I had a legislator call me this week and say, Jan, I'm usually the smartest guy in the room, or at least I think I am, but I don't know the first thing about tax policy. Yeah, there are some elements in the governor's plan that I think are long overdue. You know, he proposes to get rid of, we have something called the quality jobs tax break. It cost us $150 million a year. And the state's own studies show that we don't get a good return on investment. The legislative auditor has looked at this program. The governor wants to get rid of the film incentives. We spend $150 million a year bringing film projects into Louisiana. It creates a lot of jobs and a lot of economic activity, but the return on investment to the state isn't very good. So there are a lot of smaller programs that I think aren't delivering what we once thought that they would. But if we, again, can zoom out a little bit, and when you look at what the governor's proposing, Louisiana's overall tax burden is lower than what citizens in most states pay. We are particularly low, frankly, on personal income tax. We don't cut. We're fourth from the bottom in per capita collections of personal income taxes. But where we are really high compared to most states is sales tax. We have the highest, when you combine the state sales tax and the local sales tax, we have the highest sales tax rate in the country. So the area where we were already low on personal income tax, that's where the governor wants to cut taxes even more. He is proposing a very large tax cut for corporations, and mostly large profitable corporations. That's who pays the corporate income tax. And he's proposing to make up that revenue by increasing taxes on sales, by broadening the sales tax base, where we're already paying the most in the country, the highest rate in the country. And the way he wants to do that is to, of course, renew the parts of the sales tax that are scheduled to expire. But he also wants to broaden the state sales tax to include a whole bunch of things that aren't currently subject to the sales tax. And that, frankly, would affect a lot of small businesses, sole proprietorship. We're talking about handymen. We're talking about Uber rides. We're talking about, you know, Netflix bills. We're talking about, you know, home repairs, dog grooming, quilting. I mean, there's a whole bunch of services that we're not taxing then, and a whole bunch of people who would be now suddenly charged with collecting and remitting taxes to state government so that we could offset these other taxes that would be cut.
And just to kind of put things in perspective, I did a little back of the envelope calculation of what's proposed on $100,000 for an individual. If you had $100,000 in income, your savings annually would be $668.75 on personal income tax, state income tax. If you're married, your savings on that same $100,000, married filing jointly, would be $87.50.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And, and that's why, you know, for the sake of the exercise, look, I really truly believe there should be tax reformation. But I go back to what I said before. It's almost as though we're cherry picking certain things to get to a number to try to make this revenue neutral, right? And then we've got some internal exotic schemes going on with education and other stuff, and we're trying to see, you know, and put pieces and parts together to make that revenue neutral for local school boards. They're still have, and I'm sure, Jan, you've talked to some folks, there's still a high level of uncertainty as to whether or not that actually is going to work for them. I don't know if you've got any additional information there.
You know, first of all, I think you're asking exactly the right questions, but let's talk about revenue neutral first, because, you know, I think most listeners understand that the state has to balance its budget every year. You know, if you want to spend a dollar on schools or roads or healthcare or anything, you're going to have to raise that dollar in taxes. Washington doesn't have that problem, but state and local government does. The package that's before the legislature by the governor's own numbers, is not revenue neutral. The governor is saying that it would actually, like, we would raise $100 million less than we're raising now. So we're not only redistributing the tax burden away from, you know, large profitable corporations to more of the middle and working class people by going up on sales tax. But you're right. We're creating all these questions because one of the reasons they want to, you know, make some big constitutional changes is they want to, you know, the state has a lot of savings accounts. One of the things we don't talk about that happened under Governor Edwards was, you know, when he took over from Bobby Jindal, the state had, you know, a little over $200 million in its savings accounts in the rainy day fund. During the next 8 years, the state collected, you know, they established another rainy day fund. They started putting a lot of money away. So we had over $3.5 billion now, way more than 10 times the amount we had in 2015 in savings. Part of the constitutional changes they're proposing would basically raid those savings accounts, pay off some retirement debt, and then, you know, try to get the teachers a pay raise. But it wouldn't be the state that gives the teachers a pay raise. It would be left to local school boards. So it's a little hard to say. And I think my understanding of what they're proposing is this would really, you know, vary from school board to school board. It might work well in a relatively, you know, not well-to-do, but a parish like East Baton Rouge, where I live. It might work very differently in a small parish where they don't have as much local revenue going to public schools.
Yeah. And then, you know, I get this text, and I'm just going to go through this exercise real quick, if you don't mind. It makes everyone pay their fair share. Well, in the personal income tax world, the tables work as follows. I mean, for the first $12,500 of income, you pay 1.85% on that $12,500. On the next $37,500, which takes you up to $50,000, on that next $37,500, you're paying 3.5% on that. And anything over 50%, you're paying 4.25%. all the way to the top. If you make $100 million, you're paying 4.25% all the way up to $100 million. So everybody's treated the same, right? I mean, there's no differential there. Whatever category you fall out of at that point from your income level, that's where you fall out.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And look, Louisiana is not alone. Most states have a personal income tax, and most states have what's called a progressive income tax, which you just described,
graduated.
As your income goes up. Yeah, graduated. People don't like the word progressive. But as your income goes up, you know, you pay a higher rate on income above a certain level. So everybody who, you know, if you make the same income, you pay the same tax rate. And I think most people understand that to be a fair system. You know, we want people to have, you know, had the most success, and nobody's trying to punish success, but to pay a little higher percentage. And we want people who are struggling to make ends meet to maybe have a lower tax burden. And that's what the income tax as it's currently structured. But, you know, we pay a lot of different taxes besides the personal income tax. Corporations pay taxes, and we all pay taxes as, you know, homeowners. If you're renting, you're still paying property taxes. You're just paying your landlord's property tax. Right. And we pay sales taxes. And so it's really about, you know, which check, you know. And so when you look at the tax burden, you have to look at the overall tax burden. And in Louisiana right now, we know that the people with the lowest incomes actually pay a higher percentage of their overall income in state and local taxes. And the folks at the very top, the top 1%, actually pay a lower rate. Now, you know, 6.5%.
Well, they pay a lower percentage of the. They pay a lower percentage of their overall income. I mean,
absolutely.
You know,
they pay a lot
if you
more
make
taxes.
If you make $2 million, you're not eating more food. You know, I mean, there's a sustenance level that you reach, and, you know, there's a tax on that level. So, I mean, it may move a little bit. I may eat at Nobu's more often than somebody that's not making that kind of money. But it's not, as you point out, it's not an appreciable amount of money in the end, right?
No, exactly. And so if you're making $2 million, good for you. You've been successful, and you're paying more taxes than somebody who makes $20,000 a year. But that person making $20,000, probably working really hard, is paying a higher tax rate than that person making $2 million. And the proposal that's, you know, that the governor has put out would, frankly, move that tax burden more in the direction of low-income and working-class Louisianans and away. I mean, we have to remember, you know, one of the big elements of this proposal is getting rid of the corporate franchise tax. That's been a goal of the business community for a long time, but the corporate franchise tax is paid almost exclusively by the big boys. You know, by large, you know, and we're talking, you know, petrochemical companies that are headquartered far away from Louisiana that have invested money in Louisiana. But when you cut the corporate franchise tax, what you're really doing is you're saving $400 million for the shareholders of those large corporations instead of keeping that money in Louisiana, where we're using it to pay for teachers and education and health care and services that people need, public safety.
Yeah. Well, we will visit with you again, Jan, as more and more of these details are revealed. I know everybody's scrambling, trying to get their hands on exactly what this is going to look like. And we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, sir. Jan Moeller, Invest in Louisiana. We're actually going to have Secretary Richard Nelson coming on at 12:30. He is the brain trust of a lot of this program that's being proposed. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL. Excuse me. So a lot of people are saying a flat tax makes people pay taxes who do not pay taxes. You obviously don't understand how this works. But I tell you what is not going to work, and when you think about it, and we'll ask Secretary Richard Nelson this. So if you're married and you make $100,000 in the state, your savings under this plan is going to be about $87.50 a year, but you are going to pay sales tax on streaming services, your Cox cable bill, and alike. My Cox cable bill runs about $300 a month. That's $3,600 a year. At 10%, it's about $360 that I'm not paying now. Well, my savings would be $87.50 at $100,000. Your cost for the sales tax on your Cox cable bill alone is $360. In this calculation, you are a loser. And I think we need to ask these questions to figure out whether or not this is actually going to make sense. I mean, it sounds great, but if we're paying sales taxes on services that we've not paid on historically and haven't paid on, and we're broadening the transactions that we're going to be paying sales tax on, I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound like a great deal just with my little back of the envelope calculations, and I hope I'm wrong. I do believe that we need tax reformation, but the fact of the matter is that as part of this reformation has to be the elimination of exemptions for companies that have the benefit of these exemptions. If you want to give it for the big equipment purchases they make, I get it. But when we give these exemption certificates out, it is used from everything from toilet paper to a crane. And I don't think that's what it was intended for. Just a thought. We'll be right back. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. We'll look at the polls and Secretary Richard Nelson from the Louisiana Department of Revenue. We will be talking about the governor's tax reformation plan. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.